from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. My go-to guy for stories like this is Clint Van Zandt. You'll know Clint as a former FBI agent, hostage negotiator, author, security expert, and what's been going on in France in particular and around the world brings attention to hostage taking and just really what's going on. So, Clint, welcome back.
Hi, Dana. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Now, these cats in France and Paris, they're not your run-of-the-mill drug addict that's robbed a bank or robbed a corner store. We got some pros out here, do we not?
Yeah, well, I don't know that they're pros, but they're better. I mean, you know, if you can look at the two ends of the perspective, I just did an interview for the NBC Today show tomorrow morning. We were talking about an individual who's just been indicted in America for threatening to poison the Speaker of the House. Now, this is somebody who's probably schizophrenic. He's hearing command voices. The devil and Jesus is talking to him. I mean, this. But again, you and I know if somebody has the means, the wherewithal, and the access to hurt somebody, in this case, he was going to poison Speaker Boehner, you can do it. Well, if you can take that psychologically challenged individual and say he had the capability of doing something, what happens if you get one, if not two guys who have trained on weapons, explosive team tactics in combat, who have armored vest, automatic weapons, explosives, etc., and then give them time to scope out an activity and to commit an act like we saw in France last week on multiple acts, that's ratcheting it up quite a bit. But it unfortunately shows, just like, you know, I think of the situations we had in the States where we had the D.C. sniper, where we had two guys, one with some military training in an old beat-up Chevrolet, $300 or $400 rifle and a box of bullets, and they scared the hell out of this country [S2] Yep. [S1] For 30 days. So what happens if you move that up to two guys with training, heavier weapons, and a dedicated plan? It's going to make a big difference. So this is probably a new wave or a new type of terrorism we're going to see throughout the world.
You know, it's interesting, Clint Van Zandt's here. The media likes to use, and in fact I've used it on my program, the term lone wolf. I'm not sure if these individuals in France are lone wolves, or are they representing a group like they claim they are?
See, I don't know, Dana, if there is a lone wolf per se anymore, because the internet, the electronic media, I mean, you know, it used to be we would think about these individuals that would, you know, sit in their home and engage in pornography, for example, and sit there and watch that, and we would say how easy it is. It used to be guys had to sneak off to some dirty movie theater, and now they can just stay home and do it. Well, now you can sit home in your bathrobe and your shower thongs or slippers or whatever, and you can be radicalized on the internet. So I may, you know, someone may say that I'm a lone wolf, but if I, in fact, am coming under the teaching and the guidance of multiple individuals all over the world, you know, am I really a lone wolf, or am I part of a much larger group that is no longer connected by going to meetings at a lodge hall or something? We're connected by plugging in our computers, and I can be radicalized with that information without actually raising my right hand and joining any type of group.
You know, the term Islamic extremism, radicalized Muslims, whatever you want to call it, sleeper cells is another one. Makes everyone think about what's really going on, and is there something happening in our neck of the woods in North America? What about that, sleeper cells around here?
Well, I think so. I mean, I've seen high-ranking officials in political government as well as intelligence in the United States and some in Canada suggest that, you know, we know there are sleeper cells. I mean, that's the thing about the two brothers that were recently involved in this situation. They and the third individual, Kabadi, they were all probably part of a cell. We know the French authorities are looking for at least eight other people, but that's the unique thing about a sleeper cell, is that these individuals can know each other, and they can kind of, almost like the old World War II German submarine, they can stay under the surface, maybe just that electronic periscope that's running above the water, waiting for that message to come in that's going to activate them, or perhaps even self-activating, and then that cell just rises up. As you know, Dana, these guys had arms hid all over France. They're finding different safe houses now. We know the two brothers, in addition to, you know, the AK-47-like weapons that they had, they also had hand grenades. They had at least one, if not more, RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades, that they had planned to use against airplanes at the airport. And we know that this third individual who took over the grocery store had either one or two semi-automatic weapons, and he had a bag of dynamite with him. They're finding safe houses with money, with explosives, with guns that's linked to these guys. So anybody who says, well, you know, it's really hard to get guns, and it's not hard to get guns at all, especially in Europe where you can drive across the borders. And there are so many guns left over from the former Soviet Union and other countries that were associated with that. I mean, the AK-47s and, you know, look-alike type weapons, that's probably the most produced firearm and one of the deadliest, and probably has accounted for more deaths than any firearm in the world. And it's not hard to get your hand on one. If you're a bad guy, you got money, and you want to smuggle it back in, you can get it.
Clint Van Zandt's here. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator, looking in Australia and in France and in North America, and the reaction of law enforcement and the military to this. Let's take in particular the when you have a whole group of hostages and you're dealing with a situation like this. I know they're looking for the wife now. She was able to sneak out with some of the hostages. But what about that from the law enforcement perspective? Again, not your garden variety, not making light of that, bank robbery, but a little bit of a different situation here.
We're looking at a different type of cat, Dana. And you know what bothers me, too? There's been, you know, the last 6-9 months in the States, there's been an uproar about, you know, that police that, you know, have tactical weapons, automatic weapons, vehicles, armored vehicles. There's been a lot to have said about, you know, the police is starting to militarize themselves, and we want to get them back down to just being basically a bobby, like a British bobby on the street. Well, you know, in situations like in France last week, and like we saw in Australia and others, you've got the things that help you win in a situation like that, whether you're a bad guy or a good guy, or speed, surprise, and violence of attack. How fast are you? How much of a surprise do you get? And how violent are you? And then there's the superiority of manpower and firepower. Those are the situations that win. And look, every French cop initially who ran up against these guys were outgunned completely. These guys had on armored vests, they had on automatic weapons, and they're going against cops with semi-automatic pistols with maybe two magazines for the pistols. These police were completely and totally outgunned. And if this, in fact, is going to be the wave of the future that we're going to run into, we're going to have to accept as in society that we've got to trust law enforcement, that they have to prepare for this. They may keep this back in, you know, in a garage or something like that, ready to roll these armored vehicles out. But, you know, we don't want them to be too far away from a long gun or something that's going to help them protect themselves, or we're going to see more police die, be slaughtered on the street when they're going up against, you know, paramilitary terrorists that they're just not ready to engage.
Absolutely. You would think that we'd learned our lesson. With all the cases over the years, Bank of America, Waco, you name it, you'd think we'd learn our lesson. But maybe that militarization of law enforcement is not such a bad thing when it comes to this. Clint Van Zandt's here. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator. Clint, now we talk about you mentioned it at the start, the cyber aspect of this. All of a sudden the hacks are out, the threats against military law enforcement. Sadly, we lose officers in Florida, New York. You name it, up here in Canada. What about this? It's a different ballgame when we start involving technology.
Well, it really is. Number one is, you know, I've been on television, various media outlets, almost nonstop, just trying to give an appraisal to help people have an understanding of what's going on, who these terrorists were, what the police response is. But, you know, I've also said on television that unfortunately, at least in America, and I think around the world, television disseminates the terrorist propaganda far better than the terrorists can ever do, could ever hope to do themselves. When I look at television today, and they've shown these cell phone videos that somebody took of the two brothers involved in the shootout with police on the street and saw their tactics, I mean, from a law enforcement perspective, it's good to see. It's good to see who these guys are and what they do. For example, you know, I watched today and I saw these two brothers. They stopped the car. They're engaging law enforcement. One brother runs around the side of the car. He's got his weapon and he can't clear it. He's got a jam in. But you could tell who the more mature, who the more experienced one was. The driver, the older brother, I think, takes the weapon from the other brother, clears the round, pushed the magazine back in. I mean, there was a lot to be learned from that. But what that does, too, it also allows terrorists to make a copy of that and use that in their propaganda, showing what two terrorists and automatic weapons do when they encounter two police officers with pistols. I mean, they drove these guys back. They shot the windshield out. As you know, they shot and killed and wounded police officers. I wish there was a way, Dana, that we were not disseminating, that we weren't putting that electronic picture, that signal, that terrorist message. Anytime a terrorist says something negative and starts to rant and rage, we put that on TV because that's what television does. It's a media to show things. But again, we're putting that propaganda out for the terrorists themselves. And as a society, I wish we could find a better way to do that. I wish we could say, they put out a message, we don't want to show it to you, but just know that that goes on. But because every channel is in competition with each other, we're a media-hungry society, and at least in the States and Canada and other places, we've got enough media there that's going to feed a hungry public.
Clint Van Zandt's here for about another 5 minutes. Clint, we've talked about government, we've talked about law enforcement, that we've talked about the bad guys. What about the public? You know, you've got Joe and Mary Sixpack sitting at home watching this on TV. They're worried about what's going on, but they think that because they live in a small town, it may not affect them. What about that? What should the average Joe be looking for?
Well, I think one thing, as they say in New York, you know, if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
For example, weeks before the attack took place in France last week, there was a couple of neighbors of the two brothers. One of them thought that, I don't like what's going on. I see people coming and going. I don't like what I'm seeing in that house. And somehow a neighbor, Dana, was able to get himself into the apartment of the brothers. When he got in there, he found a weapons cache, he found the automatic weapons, he found ammunition, and as he's walking back out, he's confronted by one of the brothers who says, you know, if you do anything, if you say anything, I'm going to kill you. Don't say a word to anybody. This guy did that. He said nothing. Now, I understand he was scared for his life or his wife's life or something like that, but, you know, as members of the public, when we see something like that, we have to figure out, if we see anything, either small or great as that, what is our responsibility? Do we have a greater responsibility to society as we do to ourselves and our family? You know, law enforcement can relocate you and your family. They can get you out of the area or something. But had just one person spoken up, they could have raided those apartments, got those weapons, arrested those guys, and we wouldn't have been burying almost 20 people in France. And who knows how many others are going to be inspired by the video, by the international media coverage that's been given, to include people talking every day on television about Al-Qaeda's Inspire magazine this month that I've read, where they talk about how to build bombs out of simple household materials. We don't need to be putting that information out, but Dana, with the electronic media, television, the internet, it's going to be there. And what I'm afraid of is that electronically, that information and bad guys are really running faster than law enforcement's ability to keep up.
Yeah, very true, very true. One last question, Clint. With all of this going on with the media and the negative publicity, when it comes to law enforcement because of some racially motivated broadcasts or politicians flapping their gums, for lack of a better term, how do we keep our men and women in law enforcement, military, protective services motivated to do the job? Because, by God, it's getting more dangerous every day.
It's getting more dangerous every day. In New York City, for example, we see examples of what some people call the blue flu, where police officers are just saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to put my life on the line every time when nobody, the mayor, the police department, nobody's standing up for us. As you know, in Paris, we're healing. There are no-go areas. There are areas in Paris where police officers are told not to go into because they're so lawless, because there's radicalized individuals in those areas that throw rocks and attack people or police when they go in there. Dana, we can't have law enforcement backing down from things like that. That's what they're there for, but they sure need the public's backing, demanding the politicians stand arm in arm with police and give them the materials and the backing and the number of people they need to do the job we want. Otherwise, you know, we're starting to let society slide the wrong way, and many times the only thing that stands between us and anarchy are police officers, and if we don't support them, Dana, anarchy is just around the corner.
Well said, as always. Clint, thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator, intelligence, security, you name it. He's done it. He negotiated with David Koresh at Waco. He has been involved in many cases. And I wanted to bring him on to talk about this situation that we're seeing around the world, the radicalized Muslim, the Islamic extremists. The things that we're seeing, the media, how they're covering it, they're basically giving the voice to those in that line that want it and to terrify people. And it's terrible what's going on in France and Australia and in the States and what's happened up here. But I think Clint said it best when he used a term that they've been using in New York. If you see something, say something. And that's so important. It makes it a lot easier for law enforcement to do their jobs, because without you, without the public that's there to help, it would be much more difficult. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with a treat. Arlene Bynum is a Canadian broadcaster, journalist. She's worked in TV and radio. She's currently on Sirius XM, and we're going to talk to her about the state of affairs, comparing media a little bit in United States to Canada and what she thinks about that. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio and Access Communications Channel 7. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And every place else that decides to pick me up and listen to me, it's a big kick to have my next guest on the program. She's a broadcaster. She's Canadian. She's done TV. She's done radio. And right now she's on Sirius XM 167 Canada Talks. Arlene Bynum, welcome to the program.
Dana, thank you so much for inviting me.
Nice to have you here. Now, when we talk about satellite radio, and I'm going to get into you in a little bit, what is Canada Talks on Sirius 167?
Well, it is a talk channel on satellite radio. So, you know, it's filled with a lot of stories, telling Canadian stories, and it is, you know, it's just kind of a great example of the way talk and the magic of audio and how it applies to news and current affairs and just even telling a tale is becoming more and more popular. So a lot of people know SiriusXM for the streaming music and they All Elvis Channel, the All Sinatra Channel, and all the great things they do, and NHL, and the hockey, and now they have moved into the world of talk.
You know, it's interesting to see that when Sirius and XM first came out, the channels were, like you say, Elvis and Sinatra, but a lot of it was just rebroadcasting of what you can already get on cable. How exciting is it to be able to have someone to listen to that tells Canadian stories? And Arlene, I got to ask you that. Our media is different than U.S. media. You've done both. What makes Canadians so different?
They are different. In a way, it's a good thing. And in a way, I don't know. It's, you know, the Canadian media, I think, has really grown up. I think it's kind of very reflective of my personal opinion about how the country has changed. You know, when I first got in the business, it was all about the American media. That was the flash. And many of us thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to work at one of the big American media, either TV stations or radio stations. Slowly, I came to realize that what we were doing here in Canada was just as good. And I think that Canadians, in my personal opinion, since the 2008 recession, when the world was saying, hey, look at Canada, they're moving forward in this economic way, they're steering the ship, and in the UK they take away Mark Carney and say, please handle, you know, our money matters. And I just think Canadians have grown more confident, and it's reflective in the media. We don't have to say, you know, that we're the little neighbors to the south. In so many ways, I think that we have grown, and we offer a product that may be even far ahead. Like, as you know, we often have a discussion, and I'm always a little perplexed when politicians say, oh my God, it's going to be American-style media that's coming. And I, you know, and when you hear it and you go, wow, there's a lot of good stuff too about the American-style media, but it, I guess we do things in a calmer, more reasonable way. And that is great. On the other hand, I think we've become just a little bit more proud of what we do, and I think it's reflected all across the board in this country.
Arlene Bynum's here. We're talking about broadcasting in Canada and comparing it to the United States and the stories and what we hear, what we see, what we can tell. Now, everything that you know, Arlene, the high-profile cases, you know, you and I have talked about crime off the air that we hear about in the States, the terrorism, what we're seeing now, the lone wolf attacks in France, the attacks on law enforcement in Canada, at the Parliament buildings, Moncton, we could go on and on. Really, the stories aren't that much different anymore. Should we be broadcasting them the same as our friends to the south?
Well, I think we kind of have to cover them. I don't know if we're used to. You know, in the United States, certainly at CNN, when it came to school shootings, there was a template for it. Every time I see it now, I go, I have seen this movie before. And we were all shocked with Columbine. It started a conversation. How do we cover it? And, you know, I don't think that, you know, the bombardment of it is something that hasn't affected it. I just don't know what else you do. And I don't know if there is another way of covering it. It's important. It's real. We've learned, as you mentioned, we are not inoculated from these terrible crimes. This is not just something that happens in the United States because of their guns. God knows it happens a lot more. But I think we're learning, unfortunately, how to cover it. It is just shocking to me that the kind of stories that we are. I mean, look at, you know, when you mentioned Moncton, we were gobsmacked in this country. How could that happen?
Right.
In the town of Moncton, there was such an innocence always about the Maritimes, never thinking that something like that could happen there. But I thought of it when I watched the 2.5-day siege in Paris, where people started to say, where are these assassins? Where are these terrorists? We don't feel safe anymore. And that happened here in this country. And boy, it happened in the nation's capital. And I think if we're being a little bit smug saying we're different, I don't know if we can do that anymore.
No, I don't think we can. Arlene Byrne is here. She's a Canadian broadcaster, television, radio, and currently at SiriusXM 167, Canada Talks. Let's talk about that a little bit when it comes to the attack on law enforcement that we're seeing now, the Ferguson, Missouri, to New York, the assassination of the two officers, to Moncton, to even here a couple of years back in Saskatchewan. It doesn't matter anymore. You know what I do besides talk on the radio. And it makes you wonder, when you look over your shoulder now as a law enforcement officer, just how much the people support you. We know that. But when you hear how the media covers some of these stories, some of the race baiters, the Al Sharptons, for example, in the States, got to wonder about the big picture, and is it really worth it anymore to go out and put your life on the line?
Yeah, I can't imagine how you feel as a police officer. And I know it's tough, but, you know, when I see the Al Sharpton out there, I cringe a little bit, because for me, I remember the book, The Bonfire of the Vanities, and the Tom Wolfe book. And there was the spokesperson who may only in that book have had his own best interests in mind. I would think that it is not great journalism to just allow Al Sharpton to nominate himself for that role. There are others with really important things to say, and I hope the media seeks them out. There's no doubt in the United States there is a disconnect in some towns about how people feel. I can't put my finger on the problem, but I've certainly done a lot on it. You know, I've talked to people in Ferguson. How do you feel? I did an interview with two protesters, a young protester who was out after the shooting and an older one who had been on the marches with Martin Luther King, and they didn't agree with the violent aspect of it. So, you know, and then hanging all of it is, here it is, President Barack Obama. They have a president who represents Black America. So it's so confusing, but I do think the media has to be careful, and it's something they have to ask themselves. Are we covering this fairly? Are we covering this correctly? And I agree with you. It's very, very disturbing to think that there may be, and I don't know where it comes from, a feeling of lawlessness in certain areas. You know, you got to respect the police department. On the other hand, the police department have to make sure they're respected.
Absolutely. And there are bad cops out there. There's no doubt about it.
There are.
And they, you know, get dealt with eventually. But it just seems like lately they become the target. Men and women, military, law enforcement, EMS, fire, protective services, if you may, become the ones that become under attack. But I want to change the topic a little bit now, Arlene, if you don't mind. Arlene Bynum's here, Canadian broadcaster, to talk about the difference between American and Canadian jurisprudence, so to speak. Our courts have been always, and I'll be the first one to say, we're a rehabilitative type of court system. The conservatives get in and they talk about being tough on crime. A lot of it's been talk. I haven't seen much besides that. And then our friends in the States are mandatory minimum sentences, life sentences, but they have bulging jails, and they still have the high murder rate. What about the difference between our system and theirs?
Yeah, I'm like you. I've done a lot of thinking about it. I don't have all the answers, but I do think there are a lot of questions. I've had the opportunity to interview Conrad Black several times since he got out of jail. And, you know, to hear a story, and I don't know if you read his book, it is fascinating to see this person who, you know, was head of all these media, newspapers, and media groups, and he has a fall from grace. He gets into the prison system, and he has a transformation where he realizes that there's these people he's incarcerated with that maybe shouldn't be for small amounts of marijuana. And he becomes, he of all people, becomes an advocate for emptying the jails of some of these people. On the other hand, you know, this hunger thug argument has not resonated with a lot of Canadians, and a lot of programs and so-called being lenient, that hasn't worked either. So an examination of when and how our laws work and what is effective, I think, is very, very timely. And I don't think it's about right or left. I think it has to be done based on what's right and wrong.
And what's right for the people, because it's the
That's
people.
Right.
It's what the people put in the politicians, and whether it's Stephen Harper or Justin Trudeau, whatever Bush will run next, or Obama or Hillary Clinton, it's all about the people. And the people sometimes aren't represented the way they should be when it comes to government. But are we representing the people the right way when it comes to media? Because the media in the States, the MSNBCs, etc., on one side, the Fox News, on the other side, here, CBC, you know, you're either slanting right, left, or there's not a lot in between. What about that? The people should be represented more fairly in the media, should they not?
I know, I get a little discouraged because now it's changed so much, where you don't expect someone to have a so-called balanced or based on right or wrong. When you look at the media, you say, what will their perspective be based on what I know about them? So, and then the balance has to come as, do we have enough that their perspective is right? Do we have enough their perspective is left? And the only good thing, and I try to be a positive person, is there is a discussion about it. I think for years in this country, there were certainly maybe the CBC and maybe other areas, you know, they had a perspective that nobody ever questioned. And now there is a viable and rigorous discussion about it. And I think that's a good thing.
We touched on crime and crime stories a little bit, but I want to talk about that a little bit more before we let you go. Arlene Bynum's here, Canadian broadcaster, journalist. People have a craving. I don't like to use that term, but it's true. They love to hear the stories. In the States, ones I've covered, Natalie Holloway and Casey Anthony and Drew Peterson and all those, one of the creepiest guys I ever didn't interview was a guy by the name of John Mark Carr, who came forward saying that he was the one who killed JonBenet Ramsey. Now,
yes, I remember that story.
I've been a cop a long time, but when I talked to that ding dong, I thought, no way, I'm not putting him on the air. But the people want to hear these stories. Up here in Canada, we don't have the Nancy Grace, and I hate using her as an example, but that style of show. Although she's very narrowcast sometimes and just picks one story and runs with it for 29 weeks, we don't have that type of story. Mike McIntyre does it a little bit up here, where we can get the people the stories they want to hear. What about that, Arlene?
Yeah, you know, Canadians are funny, and they approach things in a different way. Although, I don't know, I'm wondering if you looked at the ratings, if Canadians weren't you know, watching all these American crime shows. They're very popular.
Yeah.
They're very popular with women. A lot of people don't realize that. Women resonate with them because they're about stories and relationships and people's lives. But in Canada, we are a little bit more laid back about it than in America. I don't know if that means what we watch, but it is about how people approach things. You know, when you watch the news or you watch any of these programs in the United States, people talk. You know, the neighbor goes, that guy was a wacko, that was this. In Canada, people are a little bit more reticent. They're a little more, I don't know, they don't want to be out there as much. Although I do think it has changed. And maybe what you say, you know, if these stories were available from a Canadian perspective, it would resonate a little more. I mean, look at the interest in Carla and Paul Homolka.
Yep.
But I will tell you that years ago, when I did a story on Clifford Olson and he contacted me from his jail cell and I started taping the conversations, a lot of the media in the country was a bit horrified when that story broke. And Clifford was a really good example. We lost our innocence and people went, I don't want to hear about him. In some ways, I think it's good that Canadians don't want to so-called glorify. On the other hand, though, you learn a lot about your criminal system. You learn a lot about your safety. You learn a lot about your values as a country when you examine how these cases are handled.
It's real life, and it's something all you have to do is turn on the television, open your newspaper. I don't know if people read newspapers anymore. Turn on the internet, whatever. But I guess my last question, and I should have thrown it in before, was your perspective. Luca McNaught is the most recent high-profile case here that we've seen about cameras in the courtroom. Oh, boy, they love it. The court TVs. Our mutual friend Diane Diamond spent lots of time working there. The stories in the courtroom, shall we see or will we see cameras in Canadian courtrooms and hear those stories someday?
Yeah, who knows? I've kind of vacillated on this, you know. No, it makes people act for the camera. On the other hand, when people see stuff, they can react to it. You know, I was a bit horrified listening to all these psychiatrists say that Luca Magnotta during the trial was a schizophrenic and, you know, he didn't understand what he was doing. All the killer stories I've done is, yeah, you know, maybe Clifford Olson was a sexual psychopath, but, you know, he did understand what he was doing. So I think in certain instances, it would be a wake-up call to Canadians to see how their judicial system works. I'm not so sure it isn't a good idea.
Yeah, to see how the courts work. To get the big shots in government to come out in a patrol car some night at 3 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. in a dark alley. The Al Sharptons, instead of hiding behind their MSNBC camera or their radio microphone, to actually walk a beat with a cop and see what's going on. To give that people or those people the perspective of what real life is all about. And what you want to hear real life in Canada, you tune into Sirius XM 167, Canada Talks, Arlene Bynum. What day is your show on? What time?
Monday to Friday, 4 to 6, afternoon drive.
Yeah, sounds great. I've listened, and it's a fantastic show. And hopefully we'll talk more soon. Thanks, Arlene.
All right. Thank you, Dana.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Arlene Bynum from Sirius XM Radio. She did radio in Toronto and in the States, and she's done television, you name it, she's done it. And it's different to, nice to get a different perspective as far as what's going on in this country compared to the States. I know a lot of you are in the United States, but for those of you that are in Canada watching on television or listening, it just goes to show you that, you know, our systems aren't that far apart, really, and what's been going on with the terrorist attacks and the attacks on law enforcement and all the craziness and the, you know, there'll be a new story tomorrow. All you have to do is turn on your computer or look at your phone, turn on your television. There'll be a new story somewhere, sadly. So remember, like Clint said, if you see something, say something. Support law enforcement, support people in protective services, fire, ambulance, of course our military, where would we be without them? And don't forget the politicians. The politicians have tough decisions to make. They're representing the people. They want to make the right decisions too. And it's all about us supporting them and them supporting us. And maybe we can make this world just a little better. I want to thank Clint Van Zandt and Arlene Bynum for coming on the show tonight. I want to thank the listeners at Scared Monkeys Radio, wherever you pick us up on the internet, at scaredmonkeysradio.com or at scaredmonkeys.com. Of course, those of you that are watching on Channel 7 across Saskatchewan, I really appreciate that too. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.